If you have written your question in long form, try to condense it. There's a saying, or one famous writer wrote a letter to his friend saying, "I'm sorry to write you such a long letter. I didn't have enough time to write a short one." Those who are writers can understand this. To be able to condense your thoughts into a short but lucid passage is a lot to do with good writing.
During the festival, I hear conversations among devotees that in the future ISKCON will split. I have a feeling that some devotees are waiting for that moment and they don't make efforts in order to preserve ISKCON united. But I feel I don't like this idea, and I don't understand why there is such a meditation. And what do you think about that?
A very big topic. It's a big topic in as much as there are many facets to it. And it's a very big topic in terms of its gravity also. I have broached the subject or had some exchanges with various GBC members on this topic. Specifically related to the female Diksha Guru issue, that by pushing this, it's pushing ISKCON toward a divide. Two of the GBCs I raised this to didn't seem to think it was even worth discussing. Then others, I've said it's not only on this issue, there are so many issues that could cause divide. There's the ongoing tension between the leaders of the society in the Western world and in India over various issues which has developed over the years. There's already the Ritvik divide is there already. Then there's the issue of what's called the book changes issue. There are various fault lines. A fault line is a term from geology, that when the tectonic plates, there's a fault in them, then earthquakes are likely. That they split apart and then there's an earthquake. So one GBC, I said, look, we're heading for a schism here. One way or the other, shouldn't we discuss it? And his response is that, well, you see, in all religions there are schisms. It's inevitable and unavoidable. Realistic, maybe. Another GBC member I've been in discussion with, he's very concerned and he wants to do what he can to try to avert this. So I have to discuss with him more when we both have more time later this year. Famously, Srila Prabhupada is quoted as saying, "Your love for me will be shown by how you cooperate to keep this institution together after I have passed away." It seems like a difficult thing. Do we go along to get along? That's a saying in English. Do we go along to get along? We make adjustments to others so that we can keep on going together. How far do we take this? For instance, those who are not happy with the idea of normalization of female Diksha gurus, they may say, okay, we don't split the movement, okay, let's just go along with it. You know, how far do you go with this? Then, if shortly after this or a few years after this it comes that we should have active homosexual gurus within, or transgenders, openly proud of being transgender, they should also be gurus. Then how far do you go? How far do you go? Where do you draw the line? These very issues have torn apart traditional churches in the Western world by first of all introducing women priests and bishops, and shortly thereafter introducing homosexual priests and bishops. The result has been that many left those churches and joined more traditional churches. So anyway, I'm just saying that how far do you go? You say, okay, let's just accept it. But then the next thing, and then how far do you want to go with it? So these are very big topics. We can discuss on and on and on. There have been so many discussions on and on and on. But in these hot issues, it seems mostly the participants in the discussion on both sides, they don't really listen to each other. So it's not really a discussion, it's more like a shouting match. It all looks inauspicious. Maya is at work, the personality of Kali is at work. But Lord Chaitanya's movement will go on. All of us together, however stupid we might be, do not have enough power to stop Lord Chaitanya's mercy spreading everywhere. Although we can bring obstructions into its present flow. Okay, I'm not going to discuss it more because you can go on and on discussing. It's not going to make any difference. Maybe just to help you sort it out in your mind better, to just live with the inevitability of there are major forces at work that we're just caught in the stream. We can't alter it. But we can remain together with like-minded devotees. Just like those Christian churches which split, the official churches became compromised from the principles which they've had for hundreds of years. But significant numbers of their previous members said, no, we're not going to go along with this, and they've formed their own associations. In the USA, quite a few people who were in Protestant churches, which became compromised, joined the Greek Orthodox Church. And others came under the guidance of the same church in Africa, where the bishops have refused to accept all this. So they found some way to continue prosecuting their Christian religion without compromising their faith. But it's traumatic, just like divorce is traumatic for the children and for the parents who divorce also. Okay. Any other question? There are plenty of questions.
Guru Maharaj, please explain what is the reason that nowadays relationships between husband, wife and children are so difficult in the families?
Well, you're the great family advisor. You're not going to translate that.
I am full.
Yeah, we're all fools, but we're supposed to be enlightened by transcendental knowledge. When there is emphasis on dharma, which in Western terms can be recast as responsibility, then family solidity remains strong. When there is emphasis on personal interest rather than collective interest, then strife is inevitable. An inevitable result of the consumeristic society is increased selfishness. In every human interaction, if all those participating think in terms of what's in it for me, then it's always, every interaction is one of competition rather than of cooperation. So in Krishna consciousness, in family life, if it's clearly understood by both spouses that we are together to serve Krishna and the mission of the acharyas, and that overrides what I might think of as my personal desire, then there's a hope for cooperation and harmony. What a strange age we live in. Even just a few decades ago, even among the lechers of countries like this, people got married and they stayed married and they never even thought of getting unmarried. Nowadays you need life coaching and psychologists just to make it through each day of your marriage. Okay, don't mind me taking a dig at life coaching and psychology on the side. There shouldn't be any need for it, actually. It's just another symptom of the collective insanity of what's called civilization today. Just a short time ago, there were no psychologists, and there was no divorce either. But now, probably because of psychology, there's more divorce. So then you go to a psychologist to try to put it all together. I was once visiting somewhere in Croatia, and I was lodged in the house of someone who was a psychology student. I was lodged in the apartment of someone who's a psychology student. So some of the books they had were in English. So I looked at one of their course books in English. And they had a few case studies of interactions with the psychologist. And one of them stuck in my mind, that one woman comes into the psychologist and says, "You see, I'm having problems with my husband. I don't want a divorce," she said at the beginning, "but I just want to know how to adjust to him and like that." So in the explanation, it was giving the exchange with little explanations in between, like purports. And then they use some fancy psychological language to say how she's in self-denial and actually she needs a divorce. So the psychologist can immediately recognize that she needs a divorce, but she's in denial about that. So he identifies his job to convince her, who says, "I don't want a divorce," that she should get a divorce. So that by the end of the session, he's convinced her that she should get a divorce. And that's given as an example of a successful psychotherapy session. This is demoniac. Of course, there are life coaches who try to help people come together and stay together. They're not all demons. But the contribution of Sigmund Freud to human society has, in the name of trying to help us understand better, he's made so much confusion. This is a very big topic. We have so many questions. Maybe I'll speak about it more later. But the whole of psychology is based on the wrong premise that we are the mind and not the soul, and that we are supposed to live in this world in a way to enjoy it, but be a good citizen at the same time. Very big topic. In the Vedic sages say Om, and in Russia they say My mind. For the benefit of those who might watch this later on YouTube and who don't know what on earth I'm talking about, is the Russian word for mind. Okay. Phew. Heavy questions. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy.
There are two similar questions. In one of your classes, you said that we should first learn to judge illusion from reality and after that start listening about the leelas of the Lord. Could you elaborate on it? What is the qualification of devotee who can hear transcendental pastimes of the Lord? And another question, very similar, from
related,
another devotee.
Okay.
Maharaj, please explain why you speak so much about what we shouldn't do and you speak so little about leelas of Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda.
Unless we are clear in our understanding of the transcendental nature of Krishna's pastimes, then inevitably we will misunderstand them, because they seem to be like the exchanges of flirtatious boys and girls. We should go through Bhagavad Gita thoroughly before we come to Bhagavatam. In the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, we are told, na sato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate sataha, ubhayo api drishtontas tvanayos tatvadarshibihi. Those who are seers of the truth clearly distinguish between that which is sat and that is that which is asat, knowing the nature of both. Sat means that which is eternal, real, true, proper. And asat means that which is temporary, unreal, untrue, and improper. Without that understanding, we are highly prone to misunderstand Krishna's transcendental pastimes. Therefore, we are enjoined to study Bhagavad Gita, then go through 9 cantos of Bhagavatam, then come to the 10th canto of Bhagavatam, in which the transcendental pastimes of Krishna are explained in some detail. Why do I speak so much about what we should not do and not speak much about the leelas of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya? Well, you've only mentioned 2 categories there. There's another category, what we should do. We find that Srila Prabhupada, who is recognized as the Acharya of the whole world, he also didn't speak much on the pastimes of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Actually, he did, and that's why we're able to discuss them at all outside of India. He wrote extensively about this, for instance, in his Krishna book. But in his talks to the public and his disciples, he mostly concentrated on the basic level. Why did he do that? You could ask the same question to Srila Prabhupada as you're asking to me. Why did he do that? He saw that was what was needed for his listeners. If you have a group of five-year-olds just going to school, you may think, well, I'd like them all to become neurosurgeons. So let's teach them neurosurgery. It's not a realistic proposition. They have to develop. They have to learn the basics and gradually develop until they come to that level. First, they have to learn to read and write, and then basic arithmetic and mathematics and science. Then they need biology and chemistry, then general medicine, and then they may come to neuroscience, and then to neurosurgery. So it's just realistic, that's all. It's nice to hear about the pastimes of Krishna. It's much nicer than being told we're all fools and rascals who are in Maya. But what we like to hear is not always what we need to hear. For further perspectives on this, please see my book on speaking strongly in Srila Prabhupada's service. If you want to hear about Krishna's Leela and Chaitanya Leela, I've actually spoken on these topics. I do speak on them. It's not that I'm totally silent on them. But there are many others who speak on this. You can go and listen to them if that's what you want. If you go in the electrical shop and ask why are they not selling children's toys, they'll just tell you, well, go to the children's toy shop. If you come here, you'll get a certain kind of thing. You go, so you want something else, you go somewhere else where it's available. Then,
can we use harmonium for the chanting of the holy name?
From various sources, we know that Srila Prabhupada actually said not to have it during the aratis and in the temple. He didn't ban it, he played it himself. But he also warned about being too concerned with the musical content rather than the hearing of the holy names.
If devotees chant kirtan on some other melodies, not traditional Indian melodies, is it deviation from Srila Prabhupada if the devotees strictly follow and chant 16 rounds? Yes, like vaguely related.
Srila Prabhupada, he first of all introduced very, very simple kirtan so that everyone can participate. Those recordings are still available. Generally, Srila Prabhupada chanted in simple tunes. Again, the emphasis is on the name rather than the musical aspect. But he also encouraged devotees to, if you like to sing in your own tunes, you can do that also. He wanted to encourage devotees to chant. He gave specific tunes to be followed in Mangalarti and Sandhyarati. He wanted them to be followed. So chant Hare Krishna. And I'll see you in a few minutes.
How can I constantly remember Krishna if I have to work 8 hours a day and I must focus on my work in order to properly perform my duties?
This falls in the category of commonly asked questions. You probably get asked this question yourself quite often. I'm speaking to you specifically. What's your reply to that?
I just try to focus in the morning program as good as I can, and to some degree at the evening, although evening program is compromised. And during the day, whatever I can, but I'm not so successful.
No, but how would you answer someone who asks that question?
I would propose to focus as much as possible on the morning program and pray to the Lord to help us remember Him during the day, and also dedicate fruits of our work as far as we can to the mission.
Do the best you can, and if we're sincere, Krishna will help us. If we clearly make Krishna the goal of our lives, then even when we are not directly engaged in activities of Krishna consciousness, that will be always in our mind. Just like Arjuna, when he was fighting, he had to concentrate on fighting. Krishna told him, Mam anusmara yudhyacha, remember me and fight. Then?
In the morning you said that Lord's mercy is manifested also in the form of the Guru. We often hear about the importance of worshipping spiritual master. But in my life there is Diksha Guru, there is Srila Prabhupada, and there are various Shiksha Gurus whom I listen often and to whom I address in order to solve my practical issues, because they are more accessible than my Diksha Guru. So please explain what should be my understanding of this term Guru, and what should be my proper meditation on my Guru, because there is Srila Prabhupada, Diksha Guru, and various Shiksha Gurus.
Practical issues, if we're talking about familial, social, economic, psychological, and so many other issues, that we may consult with those who are familiar with our situation and who are well-wishers in Krishna consciousness. For practical issues concerning our life, these, for instance, familial, social, psychological, economic, medical issues, and so on. So for that, you can consult your well-wishers in Krishna consciousness who know you and your situation very well. If you ask me what to do about your troublesome child, for instance, you find the child is very difficult to handle, I could give some general idea, but someone who knows you personally and intimately could, they're in a better place to advise you. Who do you focus on in your meditation on Guru? We hear Vande Guru, Vande Ham Sri Guru Shiyataf Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha. We offer obeisance to our Guru, to our Gurus, and to all Vaishnavas. Similarly, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami offering respect to Mantra Guru Arjato Shikha Guru Gan. he offers obeisance specifically to his mantra guru and then to all his shiksha gurus. Clearly within our society, we are, as a society, focused on the lotus feet of His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We also have those gurus who we look to represent Srila Prabhupada to us by their teachings and their behavior and their activities. And we are grateful to them for doing so. It also helps us to focus our devotion. The mission of all gurus is the same, which is to deliver the current of Krishna consciousness to the world. Some are on different levels. We are encouraged within this society to focus our devotion on the central guru in our life, seeing him as a representative of Srila Prabhupada. But not everything runs by stipulation. Fairly often we find devotees who are initiated by one guru, but who, after being initiated, find more inspiration in following another guru. So as a general principle, that should be acceptable if one doesn't become inimical or offensive toward one's mantra guru. It may be that, or many devotees find that a particular senior devotee who they have a lot of personal interaction with and take guidance from, that person may be in many ways more important in their spiritual life than their, in the practical direction of their spiritual life, than their initiating guru. There's one result of this scientific kind of education which everyone is forced to have in the modern world, is that we think everything should be neatly packaged and put in a box in its particular place. Everything can be packaged, measured, and put in its particular place, and then we can understand it. But entry into Krishna consciousness begins with acceptance of the achintya principle, that which we're not going to understand fully ever. So it's wise not to get frustrated in trying to understand things which will always be beyond our comprehension. Instead of trying to minutely understand how Krishna's mercy flows, just catch a hold of it. It's just like there are scholars of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and they spend their whole life studying the works of the six Goswamis, or the history of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, but they don't personally practice it. For them it's just something interesting, that's all. They may know much more about it than even most of our devotees do. But they never took the lid off the honey jar. They're just licking it from outside. So in the same way, if we're trying to... On one hand, we are enjoined to try and understand Krishna consciousness. On one hand, we are enjoined to try to understand Krishna consciousness. Siddhanta balaya chitte na karaha alash eha hoite Krishna lage sudhira manas. Krishna lagi sudhira manas. Do you know that verse? Okay, give the translation.
One should not be lazy in his efforts to understand Siddhanta.
Yeah, for by doing so, it makes the mind strongly attached to Krishna. But on the other hand, we shouldn't think that we ever can fully understand everything. Exactly how Krishna's mercy is flowing, it's inconceivable. And we see that again and again and again. Those who are distributing Srila Prabhupada's books see it again and again and again. Srila Jiva Goswami says that the position of the Guru and the position of Lord Shiva are both very difficult to understand, because they're both to be seen as good as God, but not God directly. Another good statement to understand in this regard is the statement of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Sharalata, simplicity, is the prime characteristic of a devotee. It's a hallmark of a devotee. Simplicity in the sense of just accepting, yes, Krishna, he's so great, he's so merciful. The story of Narad Muni, the cobbler, and the proud Brahmana is apt or appropriate in this regard. I trust you all know that story. Yeah, okay. Ocean of questions.
Guru Maharaj, please explain, how can we overcome laziness?
Another one of those how can we questions.
Yes, and go for Sankirtana, go for book distribution.
Have a Sankirtan leader who pushes you out of the door. That's the best. No discussion.
Should we discuss with our Diksha Guru personality, the person whom we want to accept as a mentor, as a counselor, but our Diksha Guru doesn't know him personally? So should we discuss, should we approve?
Specifically with myself. The problem is I don't know who the mentors are either. As a general principle, we can say that if someone is teaching in the line of Srila Prabhupada, then very good, yes. But a difficulty arises because everyone will say they're teaching in the line of Srila Prabhupada, but they often teach very different things. But practically speaking, everyone comes into Krishna consciousness, or in most cases, they come into Krishna consciousness through the medium of devotees. So they're guided from the beginning. And often those who are guiding you from the beginning, they will say that, well, you can listen to these talks of these advanced devotees. And as Srila Prabhupada writes, the Shiksha Guru usually becomes the Diksha Guru. So you may be hearing from or being guided by the disciple of someone who has faith in their Diksha Guru and advises you to go in that line also. So the mentorship arises naturally from the beginning. There may be so many complexities in the disturbed world of today. For instance, one may take to Krishna consciousness in one place and then, due to various reasons, move to another place, and then you're in association with a different set of devotees. There are so many nuances and difficulties and complexities. It can be difficult to remain simple. Anyway, do your best and Krishna will help. If we're sincere, Krishna will help us. Internally, from within our hearts, and externally as those who guide us in our spiritual life. There may be devotees who are thinking, well, I'd like to have someone, who, my guru, who can just be with me all the time. But practically speaking, it's not very possible in our Vaishnava world as it is at the present time. That's just the way things have evolved. Not many devotees have taken up the service of being initiating gurus. Maybe 15 years ago or 20 years ago, I remember seeing some communication from a devotee in Russia who had been initiated by an ISKCON guru, but then he went and got reinitiated from a Gauriamat guru. The etiquette of that doesn't seem to be quite right, but anyway, that's what happened. He said, oh, it's so good. Before I could hardly even see my guru, but with this guru I send him letters and he replies every day. But you can imagine what would happen. He keeps on coming to Russia and picking up more and more disciples, and then he doesn't have time to deal with them all in the same way. Srila Prabhupada interacted very intimately and personally with his first disciples in 1966. I was mercifully initiated by him in 1975. And by that time, he had so many disciples, and there was no question of me directly interacting with him at all, or of hardly seeing him much, although we heard him and read his books, engaged fully in his mission. Okay, next. So, I'm sorry I can't be with you all the time, but Ekala Malaka Ami Kaha Kaha Jabo. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, I'm just one person. How many places can I go? Srila Prabhupada said that all of his disciples should have 10,000 disciples. I have about 3,000, something like that. And I can't personally interact with 3,000 disciples. Yeah.
There are two questions from different Mataji. They ask, how can Mataji dance? Is it proper for Mataji to dance on the programs when other men are present? If it is possible, then how should they dance? Swami step or dance or jump or something like that?
For women to maintain their dignity is a major consideration. In the Vaishnava communities that I oversee, I recommend that women dance and sing and jump as much as they like. In their own separate women's get-togethers, not otherwise. I'm not sure actually how healthy it is for women to jump up and down and all this kind of thing. I'm not sure. Not sure if the women's body is meant for that, but that's another issue. I never instruct it like this, but in communities I oversee, in the temples, the women, although they're at one side, but they automatically go somewhat toward the back. But I wouldn't try to enforce such a thing in the Western world, because the cultural gap is so vast. These kind of questions arise in trying to spread Krishna consciousness in cultures which are very far removed from the Vedic culture. But yeah, in public, somewhat reserved behavior, especially suitable for respectable women.
You said that in Russia there are no serious projects. What are the criteria of the seriousness of the certain projects? Could you please explain what kind of projects you would like to see in Russia, ISKCON projects?
I think this is referring to something which I said. There was a small meeting upstairs this afternoon, so I think it's referring to that. It's not exactly what I said. I say something, it gets translated, and then it gets translated, gets processed in someone's mind, and then it gets translated back. So I'd said that there are no solid farm projects that I know of in this country at the present time. We're not questioning the seriousness of the devotees involved, but the concreteness of them in terms of their stability and their ability to foster a culture of serious practice of Krishna consciousness over years. We have to see, it takes time. Some of the projects, the farm projects that I have been involved in overseeing, they never really got off the ground properly, or they flopped. And some are coming through okay. So I didn't say that no one was serious. I'm just saying that we don't see anything solid as of yet. Okay.
Can the devotees do tattoos?
Subjectively, I'm not in favor of it. I never heard of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, or Prabhupada having tattoos. So, in this respect, I think I'll follow them. Then?
Should we follow the opinion of the majority of the devotees? Should it be a criteria, majority be a criteria for us in the devotee society?
We should follow in the footsteps of the great acharyas. How many times have you read that in Prabhupada's books? Majority is not the criterion.
If the devotee has authoritative Shiksha Guru, if he chants Maha Mantra, follows sadhana, has practical service in the community, in Srila Prabhupada's mission, what is the need for him to take Diksha?
Well, if he's already a pure devotee, then there's no need. But even Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, who didn't need to, they took gurus just to set an example for others. If you think I don't need a guru, you're probably in a lot of trouble. No doubt there are difficult issues regarding guruship in ISKCON, which not all devotees are affected by that. Many devotees are just happy with their guru, but there are others who actually have difficulties with them. I've tried to discuss some of these issues in a series of talks that I've given, and I was told yesterday that all of these have been published in Russian language also. One of the things I said is that we find that just at the time of Lord Chaitanya, just after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya, there were so many difficulties with various gurus. So it's nothing new. And like I say, most devotees, they don't have any issues. They're quite happy in their relationship with their guru. Some do. If you don't like the system, complain to Krishna. He made it. We need to establish Varnashram Dharma so that boys can be trained from a young age to be ideal spiritual leaders, brahmanas. We're doing the best we can and running on Srila Prabhupada's mercy.
What does it mean?
And Srila Prabhupada's mercy is very powerful.
What does it mean, independently thinking brahmanas?
That means that within the parameters of guru, sadhu, and shastra, one is able to analyze various situations from various perspectives. Shastra cannot possibly cover every possible situation that arises in this world. It gives specific guidelines, such as you should rise early in the morning. It recognizes that in certain circumstances the specific guidelines may not be able to be followed. And it gives a general direction. One should always think of Krishna as the general direction. How to take the knowledge in Shastra and apply it in various circumstances requires persons who are deeply steeped in that knowledge and understanding, who can apply it practically in various circumstances. Independently thoughtful does not mean independent of guru, sadhu, and shastra. Okay, one more question.
When you do service with desire, with selfless desire, with love, but in the process of the service, our mind creates some pride or desire for profit, how can we get rid?
How can we question? I just gave a talk on this that day. I was delayed a day coming here, so I had an extra day in Dubai. So I gave a talk in Dubai on that day when I was supposed to be traveling here. So the night before, a Bengali lady devotee had asked me a very similar question about the wicked mind. And I gave her my Bengali songbook, which I carry with me wherever I go, and I open it up on a certain page. And I told her, you read these two songs. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's advice in this regard. And then the next day, in the talk to the devotees, I sang one of those songs and then I explained line by line. I said, there could be many answers to this question. Here is the answer from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So if you like, you can find the translation on the internet. The first song begins, Bhajare bhajare amar mon ati manda bhajan bina gati nai re bhaja braja bane radha krishna charana ravinda. And the second song begins, Bhavano bhavana bhavano man tumi ati dushta. So there's one answer. Look it up. And that lecture which I gave should be available fairly soon, hopefully, in Russian. Actually, I'm giving so many talks. And many of these questions which are asked, they're already covered in various talks that I've given. And if you can't work it all out, just take some prasadam, that's all. Like these children. They don't know much philosophy, but they like to take prasadam. So, what is this? This looks like what is in India called halava. What we call halava in ISKCON is not what in India is called halava. It's something different altogether. This looks like beetroot halava. What is it? Marmela. Etishilia. Anyway, whatever it is, you can take it. You see, they don't know how to take it. You have to hold your hand like this. Okay, and now it's time for arati.
Кто получил, отходите.
He's enthusiastic.
Enthusiast.
Whoops, lost it.
Он уже три штуки съел.
He needs four arms. Needs four arms and 10 faces and 10 arms. Already took one. I know, I saw you. Okay. All right. Now I'm giving it to you. You distribute to all the others.